Morning. How are you? Good discussion earlier.
Yeah, we were talking at 6 o'clock hour about medical marijuana coming to Maryland. We talked to the mother of a vet. We talked to a lot of people.
I talked to a dude that I believe was faking his issue with insomnia just so he could get a spliff. That's where I come in. Oh, I'm going to be suffering from everything by the time this comes around. My back. Oh, Mike, my back's getting tight. And the ibuprofen ain't doing it.
Ooh. Joined in studio by Dr. Jahan Marku. Did I get that right?
It's pronounced Jahan.
Jahan.
Jahan is acceptable.
Jahan Marku.
God, you sound like a dude that teaches Jedi. Like you're at the academy. Jahan Marku, welcome to the show, Doc. So you're the expert, we've been told, that when this all comes to pass and everything gets put into effect, that dispensaries, you're going to kind of help them get their affairs in order, show them how to do it proper.
Yeah, explain to us what you do.
So I work for a nonprofit called Americans for Safe Access, and it's a medical cannabis patient advocacy group. And we've been training patients and operators since about 2002.
Whoa.
We started with just training them to be prepared for raids by the federal government and how to be prepared for that. And now that there are standards for how to operate these businesses adopted across 19 states, now we can train people saying, okay, now you have to have sanitation and cleaning protocols. Your staff has to be trained.
Right. This is a whole new industry.
Right.
So now where do those standards come from?
That's a great question because they didn't fall out of the sky. These are consensus-based standards that we've developed with the industry over 10 years. So we brought about 100 people from the industry together, people who operated laboratories, manufacturing centers, cultivation sites, dispensaries, to create these national standards with the American Herbal Products Association. So there are these standards that are out there that says, well, if you want to regulate cannabis as an herbal supplement or as a botanical medicine, here are the standards to make it compliant with like what the USDA requires for products and things like that.
Of the existing dispensaries that you've been in, what's been one of the biggest mistakes that you've seen that they made? What are the things that you've been like, you need to fix this first if you want to be taken seriously?
I think that the staff needs to be properly trained. And in a study we did, we helped organize and conduct, where we interviewed staff at dispensaries across the country.
Turn the fish down on the overhead.
Yeah, well, that's a start. But the the second thing is that a lot of their training had no medical or scientific information. We found that 80% of these people at dispensaries had not had any medical or scientific information working at medical cannabis dispensaries where they have chronically ill people coming in. And if you think about it, if you are a pharmacist and you are operating a cannabis dispensary, you have people potentially interacting with your patients and your name. So it could be really important that they don't say something silly or make a bad recommendation or give bad advice, because then those people who are trying cannabis for the first time may have a bad experience and then never try the product
again. Well, that's a good point, because when you go to the pharmacy and you pick up a prescription, I mean, just like nowadays, whether it's a pill or whatever it is, and, you know, they always ask you, do you have any questions for the pharmacist? And those pharmacists, they know their stuff because they've had to go to school for years. And, you know, they know what they're giving you. And they know, like you said, all of the pros and the cons and the side effects. And you can't just have some guy in there that likes to smoke weed going, oh, yeah, I think this would be good for you.
I've seen Sublime like 12 times. I know what I'm talking
about. This is a challenge that you have to face that you don't think about, because now you have a whole industry that is starting to sprout up where we're going to have to staff these places with people who are educated. So is there a school, or are there classes, or is there something in the works, or is it already in place that you're going to need to take a test and pass or something?
So at Americans for Safe Access, we have a program called Patient Focused Certification, which is where we run all of our training programs. So coming up March 24th near Columbia, we're going to have an all-day dispensary staff training. And then April 10th in D.C. at our national conference, we're going to have some enrichment courses. So people can both get the basic entry-level staff training as well as sort of advanced management training for these different types of operations. And there's not a lot of high-quality educational bodies out there for cannabis, because a lot of them don't have standards that they're based upon. And ours come from public documents. So you can see where educational materials come from. And we actually have the first of their kind contracts with governments to provide training and education. So D.C., Maryland, we've trained regulators in Delaware. The Department of Health in Guam said all operations have to apply to our program for training and education.
You've been to Guam before?
No.
Feral dogs everywhere.
Wonderful place.
Feral dogs everywhere.
What is going on with Maryland? Because there have been delays. There was controversy about, I mean, you're pretty familiar with Maryland, because there weren't enough minority-run dispensaries. Is that correct? And now, when is this getting off the ground? It seems like there's been a lot of bureaucracy. This is not happening yet. What is the give us the bottom line here.
I think you're absolutely right. The delay in the program, it's been like over 3 years, yeah. And no safe access to cannabis yet. And I think that has tainted the program a little bit.
Yeah.
And we release a report every year where we grade every state that has a cannabis program. And one of the, we get A's, B's, C's, D's, F's. So there's a fair amount of F's, a lot of C's, a few A's. Mm-hmm. And Maryland's grade used to be a B, but this year we dropped it to a C because of how long it's taken to mm-hmm. unroll the program. As far as the diversity issue, I think this is something that different states have tackled different ways. I like kind of what Pennsylvania did is they awarded points for applicants, or they're going to award points who have a diversity plan in their application. But in Maryland, it was a special issue because the attorney general said it would actually be unconstitutional to award things based on race or ethnicity. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
And whether, I'm not a constitutional law expert, but I think that the regulators were just trying to follow what the attorney general was advising them on this issue.
Chief Science Officer for the Americans for Safe Access, Dr. Marcoux, joins us. And are you still baffled that in 2017 there's still just McCarthy-era stigmas about marijuana, the plant, the effects, considering that I can go outside right now and doctor shop until I'm getting a bottle full of opiates.
Right.
I can go to a liquor store and buy enough gin to kill a donkey. But if I want to smoke marijuana, whether it be medicinally or recreationally, why haven't we as a people been able to get over that hump?
Well, what is the biggest obstacle? Is it the stigma he talks about right now, or is it the regulation and the bureaucracy and all that?
Well, those things are actually related,
right.
Because our elected officials don't make up information. They get it from somewhere. They get it from official approved sources. And those sources are like the Drug Enforcement Agency's website and other places that host information on the dangers of drug use.
Is it going to take a generation of politicians, quite literally, not to be macabre here, just dying off? Like I've said before, I think you're not going to just educate people out of racism. I think one day, 100-some years from now, it's just going to take a generation of dirtballs to die off before the stigma just dissipates and everyone like us, sort of a younger crew, are like, hey, it ain't all that bad. That just becomes the norm. Are we still living with a certain contingent of just older, out-of-touch people that still are holding on to the misgivings of the past?
I think that there are some people who haven't taken the time to educate themselves. Now, like the system in our body that marijuana interacts with was really only discovered in the 1990s, and in people still have a hard time accepting that the receptor in the brain that THC interacts with is the most abundant protein in the human brain. It's like this system that mimics the effects of cannabis is like everywhere in our body. And it's just now being integrated into medical school. So most doctors you talk to probably did not learn about this system, learn about the medical effects of cannabis or any therapeutic application. So in a sense, we're going to have to wait until this stuff is integrated into that educational system. And until sites on government websites change, we actually have a Information Quality Act against the DEA citing 25 violations of inaccuracies on their website where they contradict themselves. And the DEA has actually made statements and documents that there's, which is the opposite on their website, which they're starting to change. But they recently said over the summer when they denied cannabis rescheduling that the gateway theory is bunk. Mm-hmm. Cannabis doesn't cause psychosis and it does not cause lung cancer. And
there
I think there's a pretty big statement. It's a sign of the times changing a little bit.
Yeah.
Mike Anderson,
producer.
I brought this up yesterday, Dr.
Marcoux. Not a drug user.
It's not true.
No, big time.
I was wondering when, if ever, we'll move away from actually, distributing the plant and we'll have it in a different form. Like I know there's like things like wax out there and glass, or I know that's not a technical term. But when will it, you know, essentially be a pill? Will it ever?
Oh, that's actually since 1985, the FDA has approved a purified form of THC called Marinol. So you take, if you're regular THC, Schedule One narcotic, no accepted medical value. You dissolve it in sesame oil and encapsulate it. It becomes this magical Schedule Three substance that can be prescribed. And it's been out since the 1985. And what's interesting about a standardized form of cannabis, despite being on the market for decades, there's like no black market for this compound. There's no, it has like no street value. And I think that says a lot about the abuse potential of the products you mentioned. Say, well, these next generation products that are going to be really well standardized, high quality control, these may not have the issues we associate with unregulated products.
Joined in studio by Dr. Jehan Marcoux and Debbie. Is Debbie talking today or no? I don't know.
Debbie, hop on mic, love.
How do you factor in all this, Debbie?
Get right on there, either one. We'll hop right on that mic. Get right on that bad boy. Oh, she locked up. She locked up.
I got a blind
spot. Hello.
There you go.
Hi.
How do you know the doc? How do you know the good doctor?
I am lucky enough to work with him at Americans for Safe Access.
Okay. Very nice. And we were talking off air. When do you think, when's going to be the first time I can grab a hold of a door, open it up, and walk into a dispensary in Maryland? Estimated.
Late summer.
Well, Debbie said something interesting when we asked that, because you said that all the marijuana that's sold in Maryland needs to be grown in Maryland.
It has to be grown in Maryland, and the cultivators are just building their sites right now. So it hasn't even probably been grown.
How long does it take?
Yeah, how long does it take to grow?
Hey, Mike, how long does it take to grow?
How long before you have a bumper crop?
Like a plant is ready to harvest.
Well, when it's ready, you're talking about 3 months, give or take, depending on the genetics.
Okay. I mean, isn't that why that it gets the nickname weed? Is that it springs up like a weed?
Oh, yeah.
You don't need like a whole year worth of cultivating. I mean, you drop a couple of seeds in and take decent care of it, and it's going to do the rest.
Oh, but could it be a tough year, like a drought? Could a drought affect it?
Well, that's a very good question, Spiegel. You're joking, but how are they are they growing it? Are they just growing it outside, or are these indoor grows? Or?
No, only only about six states allow you to use the sun to grow cannabis. Some states allow greenhouses. The federal government grows their cannabis supply completely outdoors in Mississippi that's used for medical research. But in Maryland, they did not approve any outdoor agricultural operations. They do have some...
What's the reason?
It's mostly indoor.
They have two greenhouses.
So the reason people are forcing indoor, it's not because humans grow a lot of crops outside or inside with artificial light. It's an artifact of prohibition. Out of sight, out of mind.
And the children are safer.
Mommy, I came upon a field of stinky leaves, and then I ate a few, and now all I want to do is just eat Totino's pizza rolls all day.
Like, they know better than the effing sun. I mean, come on. Okay, I know it stinks. Let's just say I've known some people.
Smell is a big
people.
Factor, too.
Yeah, that when they find some of these illegal grow houses, that there's like seven layers of insulation and... You know, hell, I mean, this stuff is going to smell a little bit, but...
And more importantly, doctor, how would one go about becoming a farmhand on one of these plantations?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of mice and men, Anderson.
I think, you know, it helps to have a background growing something for human consumption. So if you don't have a, you know, I think that's a very important part of it, is that you've actually grown other things that people eat, and you understand how to grow those things with the intention that people are going to be consuming it. So,
see, it's funny because we're making all jokes. Like, speakers, like, hey, what about if there's a bad drought, or what? How do you become a farmhand?
These are real questions.
These are all real questions.
Yeah,
because,
like, things you need.
You're
to know.
Growing something that's going to be used for medical use, so you just can't be, you know, any Tom, Dick, or Harry trying to grow something. You need to know what you're doing.
Here you go. Real story. I, as a kid, every teenager's done this.
You tried to grow your own.
You tried to grow some. I got a fish tank full of dirt that I bought from a local nursery. I shoved a couple of seeds in there, and my biggest plant grew to be about 2.5 tall. It didn't bud once. It was gross, weird leaves. It was the most worthless crop of trash that I've ever grown, because I didn't know S from S.
And you can't be taking that and taking it to a dispensary and trying to medicate
someone. That's kindling that I grew. You need someone that knows what they're doing, someone that did the proverbial green thumb.
That's why we train people, is because you're getting the staff coming on. And one is you know, people are working in essentially what are agricultural sites. And those aren't necessarily the safest place to work, right? You got a lot of chemicals, you got a lot of tools. So people have to know how to handle themselves, and especially work in an indoor environment where, you know, breathing wrong on the plant could potentially contaminate it, or
Whoa.
Tracking in stuff. Like if you're sick and you go into your site and you sneeze on stuff,
ugh.
Right? So there's got to be those sort of policies and protections in place that people who, say, are sick, can't work, that they're putting on, like, the protective equipment or at least clean clothes before they go into the cultivation operation.
You almost treat it like you would a food processing facility. I mean, whether it be a weed plant or a Snickers bar. Yeah. I don't want somebody breathing on it. I don't want somebody sneezing on it. And I don't want somebody touching it unprotected before I ingest it, consume it, smoke it, or take it. Let's take some calls. We've had some people that have been holding for a little bit. They have questions for the good doctor, Dr. Marcou, Chief Science Officer, Americans for Safe Access, talking about eventual marijuana dispensaries medicinally. Let's see here. Mike in Baltimore has been holding for a while. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's up, Mike?
Good. Hey, Dr. Marcou, I got a couple quick questions. Josh had mentioned to you about what the holdup was as far as getting the licensing operations, the administrative end of things going. Do you think it had anything to do with a pushback from law enforcement? Because what law enforcement's saying now is that the marijuana that you see today is 20-30% stronger than what you would see back in the 80s or back in the 70s. Do you think that the holdup was due to some pushback from like the law enforcement community?
Well, you know, I've interacted and through training and, for instance, the former law enforcement who are program administrators for different states have attended our trainings, and they, you know, they're mostly concerned with diversion. But, you know, you mentioned this super potent weed statistic that keeps coming out there. And I think this is one of sort of the big myths about cannabis, because another thing that has happened over the last 30 years is our ability to analyze stuff, the sensitivity of our equipment. Our accuracy has also gone up. But we also have to remember that consuming flowers, cannabis and the whole flower porn, is kind of like a spoiled, you know, thing for the modern world. People haven't been consuming the flowers globally. Hash and concentrated products for thousands of years are probably the most common form of cannabis, at least in the Middle East, like 1,000 years ago. Everyone was trading hash, which is 30 to 70% THC by concentration, up and down, you know, the coast of Africa, throughout India, and all these places. And so when I hear these things about, oh, cannabis
nowadays
being potent, I'm like, well, what people had 1,000 years ago was just as potent as what they have
just
today.
Just as gnarly. So that's a misconception.
Absolutely.
Who else we got here? Ernie in Dundalk, you say that you have a 3-year-old son with cancer that's actually currently taking treatments?
Yes, I do.
So give us a story.
He was diagnosed with rhabdomyosarcoma about 7 months ago. The doctor finally gave us the okay to start with the cannabis treatments. We got a source that gives us it's close to the Rick Simpson oil. He also has a CBD tincture he takes every day. I just wanted to know, is there anything else that would be okay for a child to take for cannabis?
I think it's a great idea to start with the cannabidiol with CBD.
Okay.
But I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, especially with brittle children with conditions, you want to be very careful and definitely coordinate and be open with your, you know, primary care physician, because, you know, even just changing the dosing, the amount of active ingredients they're getting can cause some, you know, non-serious adverse events or discomfort. So I think you want to be very careful about changing up the products and changing that. You want to find a consistent source. Definitely, I think the, you know, high CBD is the way to go for that.
Let's go to George in Virginia. You got a question, Dr. Marcou, joining us in studio.
Yes, thank you. For the doctor, just two things. One, making a blanket statement that marijuana is not directly related to psychosis. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I smoke pot occasionally now because it is extremely much more potent than it was in the 60s, the over-the-counter stuff. And to make a blanket statement about the psychosis thing, I mean, the youth is going to interpret that as like, oh, well, that's okay. That means I can use it all the time. I'm in a business where I manage over 100 people, and I tell you what, there's a couple guys sometimes that they're stoned all the time, and you can see how it affects them. And there's days they come into work when they don't have it, And I'm telling them, look, go home and get high, because they're completely out of their brain because they're not high. So how can you say it doesn't affect them on a psychological level?
That actually was not me. I was actually quoting what the DEA said in their denial of petition of rescheduling over the summer. And by psychosis, we don't mean intoxication. We mean like a mental health disease. And so just because, say, someone uses cannabis and experiences a short-lasting anxiety attack, doesn't mean they're going to develop an anxiety disorder later in life.
And for the record, George sounds like the greatest boss ever. Where he calls you into the office like, hey, look at me. Your eyes are clear. You showed up on time, and you're not chugging water. Get your ass out of here. Hit a spliff and get back to work.
Well, what can you speak to? I mean, guess what he's, you know, kind of...
Worker safety stuff?
Well, there's a worker safety aspect there, but I mean, I guess... Can you ask the question, I mean, do people become dependent on this to the point where, like he said, these guys don't even seem normal, or they don't seem like they need it just to get normal again?
So, first of all, OSHA has put out a statement that they don't support the blood testing and DUI testing sort of standards for looking for active ingredients of THC. They support impairment testing, like actually doing a measurement of intoxication if you think someone's intoxicated at work. Sorry, what was the second part of that question?
Well, he said that these guys come in, he knows they smoke pot, and on the days they don't, it's like they're off on the days they're not smoking. So is there an argument made that maybe these guys are dependent on it and they need it just to function on a daily basis?
So there's two sides to that question. And, you know, in terms of looking at other drugs like caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, opiates, cocaine, amphetamines, the percentage of people who develop use disorders is way less for cannabis than any substance you can probably name.
People go, man, I really need my morning cup of coffee. I can't start my day without it. I if I don't have it, I have a headache, and I'm just not right.
Don't talk to me before I've had my cannabinoids.
Right.
But also there are people out there, and maybe I can just use kind of a simple analogy, like a conceptual example here. And like
we're good with simple analogies.
So let's use like sick versus healthy people. And let's say, you know, you have a diagnosis where your doctor wants you to increase your appetite, whether you have like cancer or HIV/AIDS, and you're taking cannabis to treat that. You take cannabis, it's going to stimulate your system to a normal level where you're going to have an appetite. Where if you're a healthy person, you might overstimulate your system and then eat everything in the fridge, right? And so I think we have to keep this in context with why are people using it and what is the background there. Doctors, 10 years ago, a doctor proposed that there could be an cannabinoid deficiency syndrome because, you know, we make our own natural THC-like compounds in our body. Just like we have endorphins, right? We have endogenous opiates. We have endogenous cannabinoids. And those those are important regulators for our body. And I think that there are documented cases of people who have mutations in that system where they're not making enough of that. And so some people might be getting more side effects than others simply because there might be a genetic factor. And I think we can't jump to conclusions. But definitely, you know, being intoxicated at work is not a good idea most of the time.
Yeah.
So I think if employers are concerned about that, they should institute impairment testing, such as the American Chemical Society has recommended, such as OSHA has recommended, to deal with that issue.
Follow him online at Jahan Marcu, JAHANMARCU. We appreciate it. Hopefully when these doors get open, dispensaries will bring you back, see how they're going. I appreciate your work telling them, hey, Take off the Grateful Dead shirt, go to school, clean this spot up, and quit listening to Fish on the Overhead. Hey, you're a real fish. Place, though. Yeah, but not at my doctor's office.